And look down the committee, everybody first in the ready.
Okay.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome you to the House Committee on Revenue. Today is the Ides of March, 15th of March. We are about 5 minutes late, so it'll be okay if we run about 5 minutes over, I suppose. Various representatives have various other functions to attend and participate in, and we recognize that your schedules are busy ones. We are scheduled today to have public hearings and potential work sessions on a couple of different bills. What we'd like to do is we'd like to go ahead and start off by having a public hearing on, and we'll take this a little bit out of order. I know that there's a lot of folks that would like to address a number of kinds of things, but why don't we do this? We'll take House Bills 2542 and 2629. Let's take those two first and open a public hearing on House Bill 2542 and 2629. And I think we have some invited testimony. Link Cannon, Paul Phillips, Don Lance. If you folks would like to come forward as our first panel, we invite you to come forward. And there are a number of folks here, both from the accounting profession, the legal profession, and we appreciate you folks coming forward on behalf of the business community as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips, representing the Smart Growth Coalition. Today, I have a number of people here with me. In addition to Link Cannon, we have Bill Linden from the Oregon Metals Council, too. For those of you that may not recall from previous sessions, the Smart Growth Coalition includes Columbia Sportswear, Nike, Intel, Bear Creek, Lithium Motors, Snitzer, Steel, ESI, Tektronix, Greenbrier, Precision Castparts, Monaco Coach, and Cascade Corporation. And, Mr. Chair, we have Don Lance from Monaco who would like to testify from a tax expert perspective. The bottom line is these are manufacturers that are interested in maintaining a balance within tax policy that allows them to remain competitive on a national basis. For the past few sessions, we have participated in the Revenue Committee's deliberations on ReConnect and a variety of other issues. It is important in our mind that House Bill 2542 pass and that we connect fully with the federal tax code. To disconnect, which Oregon has done in the past, can cause unnecessary lacks of efficiencies and duplications and problems from a reporting standpoint that, in our opinions, are unnecessary. Further, the debate over a deduction for income tax attributed to the U.S. Production activities under the American Jobs Creation Act of 2004 is clearly, in our opinion, the wrong place to disconnect, as some have suggested. This measure passed with bipartisan support, including Senators Smith and Wyden, Representatives Walden, Hooley, and Wu. Senator Smith was the main architect of the act on behalf of Oregon manufacturers. Oregon, as you know, its economic health is dependent on manufacturing. Oregon's gross domestic product is twice as dependent upon manufacturers as the average U.S. state. We should do everything possible to encourage their economic well-being. Their jobs are exactly what Oregon needs to return to economic well-being. To argue against this effort is to say it's okay to take jobs, for example, overseas. That can't be correct, but that well may be the result. We need high-paying, family-wage jobs, manufacturing jobs in the state of Oregon. These jobs are dependent. These are the jobs upon which we are dependent on income tax dollars that go to fund many of the programs that have caused some of the vexing debates over the last few sessions. So we would encourage, on behalf of the coalition and the companies that I mentioned before, that for streamlining reasons and a variety of other things, that we reconnect to the federal tax code and do not disconnect. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Don Lance of Monaco.
Thank you, Paul.
Chair Butler and fellow members of the committee, my name is Don Lance, and I am the tax director at Monaco Coach Corp., who's headquartered down in Coburg, just outside of Eugene. We have manufacturing facilities here in Oregon and also back in Indiana, about 50% in each location. What I was hoping to do today is kind of just share with you a day in my life, I guess, in terms of how we have to deal with an issue like this. When we're in a situation where we don't have consistent rules, all of a sudden we have to try to guess what's going to happen down the road. On something like a reconnect bill like this, it's going to be months down the road before we have an outcome known. The federal legislation passes, we're wondering what's going to happen at the state level if there's not an automatic reconnect. And particularly for public companies like Monaco is, in this day and age of the heightened scrutiny on public earnings, things of that nature, we do file quarterly earnings with the SEC, and that's public information. And accuracy, above all else at this point in time, is extremely important. So we're trying to eliminate as many uncertainties in the process as possible. This is obviously just one piece of that puzzle, but as several things start stacking up, if they all go the same direction, all of a sudden you can end up with problems when you make a very straightforward and legitimate shot at trying to be as accurate as you can. It also affects things like income tax, estimated tax payments, tax returns, things that you think you know which direction you're headed, and then all of a sudden things spin around on you, and you can be faced with having to amend returns and things of that nature. The general idea of examining, on a piece-by-piece basis, certain things seems to be somewhat difficult in the sense that at the point in time we decided to connect with the federal legislation, there was obviously hundreds or thousands of different provisions out there that, we decided, we're going to do things the same way as the federal government did. When they're passing legislation, they go through the same sorts of things that you have to go through in terms of, what kind of revenue effect will this have, and what kind of policy, decisions are we projecting to the general public here when we pass this law. So I think it was a wise decision and a good decision to say, well, let's just follow federal because, they're going through that same process. So having established that and establishing a track record where, we think that's good enough to all of a sudden start looking at individual components of legislation just creates uncertainty, and I guess I'm a little concerned about the message that it might send. I think the domestic manufacturing deduction is a good example of that, and it's certainly one that's important to Monaco as a manufacturer that does have all its jobs based in the United States and is battling every day to stay competitive with our competition. But I think it also affects, other manufacturers as well, and particularly smaller manufacturers that may be based entirely here in Oregon, where this deduction could put them at a real competitive disadvantage with other companies, manufacturing companies that may be located in other states where this rule doesn't apply. So I guess after we've tried so hard over the last few years, and I know in the last session and the session before that, there's a lot of thought put into how can we attract jobs to Oregon, because that's what it's all about, is trying to get jobs located here to stimulate our economy. And it just seems like if we were to go after that domestic manufacturing deduction, we're sending the wrong signal after all that work that Oregon does not support manufacturing jobs. So in closing, again, just dealing with this on a day-to-day basis, I think it would make my life a lot easier if we were consistent, if we decided that, we're going to be, consistent and connect to the federal legislation, and we'll just do that on an automatic basis, not just this time, but going forward. It sure makes it easier for business to know what's coming down the road and makes it easier for us to react and operate. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Don, Monaco does not have any extraterritorial income.
No, we do have extraterritorial income. We do not have any locations outside the United States. We do export goods to Canada, so we have benefited from the extraterritorial income deduction that, as you know, is phasing out, so that benefit is going away. So this domestic manufacturing deduction does replace that, but it also enhances that, I think, because it does encourage the location of jobs domestically.
Don, specifically with regard to House Bill 2542, the Reconnect, I don't know whether you may have had the most recent iteration. I believe March the 2nd. Is that the most recent iteration? Is there a later March the 9th? There's a March 9th iteration of the various line items. Have you had a chance to look at that, how any of those items may affect Monaco?
No, I don't think I have seen that.
But you probably have reviewed specific line items that Paul has reviewed with you as to things, credits or deductions, specifically that we are in the process of reconnecting to.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I'm wondering if you could just pick out items on that list, or of the items that we're considering the reconnection, the 0507 and specific, and anything before, because this goes back and affects after we last met in the 03 session. It affects those items which were passed subsequent to our signee die, as well as those items in 2004. So are there specific items that you could pick out? I guess I would like to maybe address any of those that are specific to the Monaco folks that you have a vested interest in.
Well, Mr. Chair, not having the list in front of us that you have right now, might be easier for us to have Bill and then Link testify and give us a chance to review.
You bet. Let's do that. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to be hitting with that cold, Paul. Bill Linden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Linden, representing the Oregon Metals Industry Council and its member companies, which include all manufacturers in the metals. They're all manufacturers in the metals sector, such industry leaders as Boeing, Schnitzer, ESCO, Northwest Pipe, Gunderson. And our message today is fairly simple. We strongly commend you to reconnect fully to the federal tax code. As my colleagues alluded to, that federal legislation was the result of much work and lots of compromise. It represented, in our view, a balanced approach. And there was give and there was take. And the primary concern we have is with a suggestion that the domestic manufacturing deduction in particular be dropped or selectively disconnected.
Which one, Bill? I'm sorry.
The domestic manufacturing deduction, the American Jobs Creation Act piece. All of the member companies that we represent had benefited historically from the extraterritorial income treatment, and that's being phased out. They also, however, very much support the domestic manufacturing piece because not only because it sort of represents a trade-off for the phase-out, but because it encourages more investment and development of domestic manufacturing capabilities, which is what these companies are all about. That, you know, this is where they've chosen to have their primary manufacturing facilities. And in order for Oregon to be competitive, they feel that we've got to present a tax climate in which we're doing things that encourage businesses. And we think that if you were to excise out that particular piece, that would be a compelling disincentive. So we would urge you to do the full connect, and I'd be happy to try and respond to any questions with these gentlemen.
Paul or Bill, again, I'm going to ask you the same questions I asked Paul, the specific one of the specific items that you're talking about is the deduction for income attributable to U.S. production activities.
Yes.
Okay. How does that affect the U.S. metals industry in the state of Oregon?
Well, we view it as an incentive that the companies can take advantage of in terms of enhancing their production capability, increasing their production capability, in essence. It's related to jobs. It's related to, you know, how many people we employ and how much we produce for sale and export. And it is, again, part of it is a trade-off that was made at the federal level for the phase-out of the extraterritorial income treatment. And so it in a sense, replaces one incentive with a different incentive that is much more focused on on domestic manufacturing development, and our companies view that as a positive.
And Bill, if I ask you questions that you can't answer, you can come back and answer them another day. But I would like to know in the metals industry, Oregon's metal industry business, how many employees are we talking about?
We're talking in Oregon about directly or indirectly employing over 60,000 people, and we can give you a company by company breakdown if that would be helpful. Now, we don't represent all of the metals companies, but we represent the leading companies in that sector.
But it's the position of the Oregon Metals Industry Council that the deduction for the income attributable to U.S. production activities as part of the ETI and manufacturing tax break was a trade-off for the repeal of the ETI exclusion?
Well, at the federal level, and again, I wasn't there to watch those
right.
Deliberations, but what we understand is that there were a lot of different issues on the table and a lot of compromise involved in crafting that package, and that was one of them.
So you feel that if at the federal level or at the state level, if we started to parse out the deduction for income attributable in exchange for the repeal of the ETI exclusion, that would be... not fair to income, then.
Mr. Chairman, we believe so because we think that while you're not bound to follow what the federal Congress did, they came up with a bipartisan package that I think most parties felt was very balanced. And if we start unbalancing it selectively in terms of business in Oregon, it's going to have an impact. There's no question about that.
Okay. Further questions? Yes, Representative Galizio.
I had a question for Mr. Phillips. You said in your testimony that opposing a full reconnect is akin to saying it's okay to take jobs overseas. So my question is this. One of the elements of this reconnect are the federal subsidies for Medicare prescription drug, which are subsidies for insurance and pharmaceutical companies, and will cost Oregon $9.2 million in 2005, 2007, and $9.5 million in 2007 and 2009. So how is that... are you saying that including that... we should support that part of it, too, and that voting against this is akin to taking jobs overseas?
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, if I may correct you just slightly, what I said was specific to... the manufacturing industry. It did not include the pharmaceuticals, so there are two different issues. How you balance those, that's why you're there. I spent most of my legislative career on the Revenue Committee. That's a lot of fun. I encourage you to enjoy yourself. But I would tell you in all seriousness, one of the things that we did during my tenure was to reconnect fully to the federal system because of what the tax experts and the industry said, and that was one of the best things we could do. And not only did Don from an individual company and Link from his OFICs and Bill from the Metals Council, but you heard previously from the AEA, those are the majority of the industry, manufacturing industry in the state of Oregon, encouraging us specifically on that one manufacturing, and that was my point, Representative.
Okay, but my follow-up, you're here testifying for a full reconnect. Am I correct on that? Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe it is in the best interest of all of Oregon to fully reconnect, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hess.
Thank you. This is to whoever, but our understanding is that Nike will not receive any kind of a benefit under the qualified production.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Haas. That testimony was provided to you last weekend, but did not come from a representative of Nike, and that is incorrect.
So Nike, do we know how much or to what extent?
There are some things that they do manufacture here in the state, and that would be applicable under the manufacturing, but it is not the major issue in the big picture. What the issues are really the issues that Don spoke to on efficiency, making sure that their reports are consistent, and the duplication and the streamlining side of it are meshed together. That's the focus. I chose not to address the incorrect testimony that you were given last week. That's not the point. The point is this is a major bill that should be passed because of the Reconnect side, because of what it does to all of business, including Nike.
Thank you. Further questions of Paul? Link, why don't we go ahead and get you, and then we'll come back to you, Don.
Mr. Link? Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Lincoln Cannon. I'm here representing the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'm the Director of Forest Resources and Taxation. OFIC is a forest landowning association whose members own over 90% of the industrial forest land in Oregon collectively. And what I would like to speak to today and what's in my testimony, we have many major manufacturers who are members, and I think most of the comments you've heard here with regards to manufacturing would apply to our manufacturing members. But we also have a substantial, a great majority of members who are not manufacturers, but forest landowners. And the piece I've picked out here to talk about with regards to the Reconnect is what was done in the 2004 Jobs Creation Act, which was the law was changed to allow the amortization of reforestation expenses. It has always been allowed, I believe, with a cap of $10,000, and that cap was removed so that when you reforest lands, you're allowed to amortize those expenses over, I believe, a seven-year period rather than having to capitalize them and carry them for the entire length of the rotation. And the problem for our folks is that having to keep two sets of books, because on the one hand, for federal tax purposes, you're amortizing, and so your account balances change, whereas for Oregon, you're not. And so your account, you'd have to essentially have two sets of books. And this is just one example of how I think the problem with not reconnecting. It flows through to all the other provisions and all the other industries. So this is just an example specific to our industry. According to the Legislative Revenue Office analysis, as I understand it, as a whole, the revenue impacts are negligible, and it is a balanced compromise. We think it's good tax policy and good for the state to reconnect. So we fully support this bill.
Link, specifically, you're referring to the deduction of the first $10,000 of qualified reforestation costs. Are there other portions of the bill that would affect the members of the OFIC?
Yes, Mr. Chair, in many different ways because of the sort of makeup of our ownership. We have members who own as little as 10,000 acres of just forest land to Weyerhaeuser, who is the largest landowner and manufacturer in the state, and everybody in between. So it would be hard to make blanket statements about how it affects our members. I think it's fair to say, characterized for the large manufacturing firms, that the comments that the preceding people have made would also apply so with regards to extraterritorial income and the domestic activities.
Manufacturing jobs in the state of Oregon could be at stake then for your members as well.
Mr. Chair, this is certainly an incentive to keep manufacturing jobs here and would be a competitive disadvantage were we not to reconnect.
Okay. Questions of Mr. Lincoln? Don, you had an opportunity to look, and I apologize for not having that in your hands before we started our meeting today.
Oh, not at all, Chair Butler. Yeah, this is very good. It does break it out, you know, and so you can see the individual components. From Monaco's perspective, the one item that really is of a significant issue to us is the one that we talked about briefly already, the extraterritorial income and manufacturing tax break, as it's called. Again, with domestic manufacturing operations and the loss of the extraterritorial income deduction, that is certainly one that's big to us. You know, I could look at others and say that I can see how, you know, there's other provisions here that would be beneficial to Oregon businesses, many of which apply to smaller businesses that just won't work for us because of our size. But that's the one that is important to us.
And you have sales operations in multiple countries. Is that what you testified to?
Yes.
Okay. And manufacturing in Oregon and in?
Indiana.
Okay. And that's split about 50-50?
Yes.
Do you know whether Indiana might be reconnecting? I assume you're working on the tax issue.
Yes, as far as we know, they are. Okay. I have not heard anything.
No parsing out of the various elements of the extraterritorial income in Indiana that you're...
Not to the best of my knowledge, no.
Okay. Further questions of members of this panel? Just one last question I have, Don. total employees of Monaco Coach in Oregon?
It's about 1,400, I believe, currently.
Mostly in manufacturing?
Correct.
And what of sales in Oregon?
Oh, boy. Sales in Oregon.
Is it disproportionate?
Well, no. I mean, our overall sales are about $1.4 billion, so I don't know if you meant Oregon customers or out of our Oregon locations, but I would say that it's roughly half in terms of total dollars, if not more, because the higher-end products that we produce come out of Oregon. So.
And they come, and then they leave Oregon.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, a lot of them get shipped out to dealers across the country.
Okay. So what we did, Don, my recollection is last session we passed a bill relative to weighting the sales factor, and as you file multiple state returns, you probably are filing in 50 states at this point, as you file the multiple states returns, you find that sales factor, of course, it hasn't fully phased in yet. Will that be of long-term benefit to Monaco?
It'll be a huge benefit to us, yes, particularly given the nature of some of our competition in other states and the rules that they face in those states. They had a tremendous competitive advantage on us as a result of the apportionment rules that existed there. And so with Oregon doing what it's done, and as you stated, it's phasing in. It's not there yet, but it's going to have a huge benefit for us, yes.
When do we fully phase in on that? Is it 2011?
08.
No.
It's a
28.
2008.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Other questions? Thank you very much for that clarification on the allocation, sales allocation apportionment.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We have a couple of folks here from the Oregon State Bar Association, Carrie Schoenfeld and Mark Hugland. If you folks would come up, please. Appreciate your waiting for us on this.
Are you interested in House Bill 2469, or are we continuing on?
You can do 2469, or you can come back to 2542. You gave us. Oh, okay. I beg your pardon. You're absolutely right.
If I may, then I'll chime in on 2542.
Well, start on 2542.
Chair Butler, and members of the committee, my name is Carrie Schoenfeld, and I am the chair this year of the Oregon State Bar Tax Section, and I am on the board of the Oregon Society of CPAs. I was down here testifying on behalf of the CPAs when we did accomplish a rolling reconnect about 6 years ago, and I have to tell you, it is of extreme importance to the CPAs. I think this was one of the issues that really got everybody involved and excited, and when there was a possibility that the bill would be vetoed by the governor, I think his fax lines were jammed with faxes and phone calls from members of the Society of CPAs. I think it's just very difficult when we have a disconnect and we don't tie to federal. I think the position of the Oregon Society of CPAs has always been that there's going to be some benefits to our clients and some detriments by reconnecting. But it is of big importance because if we don't have a rolling reconnect, then CPAs are actually filing tax returns that are out of compliance when they file that tax return. Because, for example, all of those returns that are being filed right now, the CPAs are having to make a conscious decision that they are going to file a return that's out of compliance with the expectation and hope that it will then be reconnected. If it doesn't reconnect, they're going to have to go back to their clients and file amended tax returns. So I think a rolling reconnect is of extreme importance to the CPAs. And again, notwithstanding if there are tax impacts, we've always said that the reconnect is more important, and that's what we would urge you to do as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Carrie. Mark, are you prepared to talk to 2542, or do you want me to open up public hearing on the other as well?
You can just open up public hearing the other thing as well.
Why don't I
think
do
Carrie
that?
Said it quite well. And
let's go ahead, then. I'm going to additionally open up then a public hearing on 2469. If I could, that's so we all three bills are open for public hearing at that point.
No, they're all three. Let's throw them all in the hot.
We're having.
Chair Butler and members of the committee, my name is Mark Huglin. I'm an attorney with the Oregon State Bar, and I'm the secretary of the tax section of the on the bar this year, and we're here to open up regarding House Bill 2469. And our position is that since we're sponsoring, or one of the with the bar sponsoring this, we're here to discuss it today. And I think that the first thing I'd like to mention is the what the bill does. Just real quick summary is it just defers the taxation, the inheritance taxation, on until the death of the surviving spouse. At the last legislative session in 2003, the very last minute, a special provision was adopted to, in essence, make certain elections what they called a Q-tip like election in the for the estate of the first spouse to die. And what our bill does is just allows the deferral of the taxation on that special election until the death of the subsequent spouse. The policy, at least at the federal level and had previously been with the state level, has always been to defer the tax on those estates until the death of the surviving spouse. And it's essentially what the bill does. It allows the where certain changes in wills and trusts are not instituted, it allows the correction of those changes so people do not have to go back and make the changes to their wills and trusts. And I'll let Carrie kind of talk about some of the other issues.
Why don't we just hold it right there and make sure. Thank you very much. You've done an excellent job of telling us what it does. Let me make sure that council or our legislative revenue office, do you have anything to add to that, Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler, well, you have your revenue impact statement and your staff measure summary in your packet there. But basically, as far as last session, we were just discussing there, you know, Oregon had this election language in the bill from last session, but it basically just didn't address all the different provisions that are needed under current law in order to make it easy for estates to have this special marital property. So basically what this is going to do is just kind of expand that base of what is Oregon's special marital property in this state. And then it's not going to force taxpayers to have to pay a lot of costs to get their wills and their trusts and things changed. And this was all part of our orientation with estate tax, and that's what that estate tax attorney came and discussed with us about this bill and this particular provision. So basically, it's just a follow-up from that. And the revenue impact basically is, we shouldn't really have much, but it is, the overall impact is pretty indeterminate because we don't really know how many estates have filed and paid estate tax, but yet they may be allowing and go in and have refunds made then after the passage of this bill for this special marital election. But it really is anticipated that the number of states should be, you know, pretty small in the upcoming biennium. And certainly over the long term, there will be no loss in state general fund revenue because the states will eventually pay this Oregon estate tax. It's just a matter of when are they going to pay it. Are they going to pay it at the time of the first surviving spouse or at the time the second surviving spouse actually passes away? So
wouldn't the surviving spouse have the ability to intercept and receive corpus based upon some kind of a health, education, maintenance, support test so that you could dissipate corpus? The surviving spouse could dissipate corpus for their own education, for their own health, perhaps.
Chairman Butler, I don't know that technical detail.
Okay.
But basically, with the bill, that's all it's doing is clarifying current law as far as, you know, what is going to be allowed under the special marital property. And then it's providing a period of time in which you can have refunds without having to pay interest. That goes until March 1st of 2007. Then after that, any refunds will be paid with interest. And so that's about it.
Thank you. Carrie?
Chair Butler and members of the committee. I think just to back up a little bit, this proposal came from a task force made up of a lot of different tax attorneys, estate planning attorneys, accountants, and members of the Department of Revenue, trying to come up with some solution that will fix the problem that we have while staying revenue neutral. And we feel that this is important to go through regardless of whether we may have some partial reconnect or whatever we may do with regard to inheritance and Oregon estate taxes. This is really just that fix to try to defer taxes so that most of us out there have drafted wills and trusts with the expectation that of our clients that they will not have to pay any tax at the first death, that it will be deferred till the second death. I think it's important to keep in mind that even under Oregon law as it stands, they can still do that, but most of them will have to go back to their attorney and have their wills or trusts redrafted. If they don't and the first spouse dies, they can go to court and get this fixed. So we're trying to, I always say it's an unemployment for the attorneys. We're trying to allow our clients to not have to go back and do that and still achieve the objective that they thought. And, Chair Butler, you're correct that part of the idea of having the deferral is that the surviving spouse can use those funds for health care, and I think that's where we really see clients needing it for health care. Maybe younger clients may need it for minor children, and it is possible that it would be dissipated. But, again, they can do that same accomplish that same objective if they go back and have their estates amended. And we do have just sort of an overview that we can go through with you, or we can save it until tomorrow for the work session.
Well, we might even have a work session here today. It's scheduled for public session, public right. hearing, okay. possible work session. So, I'm sorry, no. You're right. Absolutely right. It's not scheduled until tomorrow. Wrong bill. Cancel that. Back up, reverse it. Yeah, let's... other questions of Carrie or of Mark? And you have something to pass out for tomorrow?
Yes, Carrie? We actually passed it out today, but okay. We can go through it tomorrow.
All right. If there are no further questions of Carrie and Mark, I'm going to go ahead then and close the public hearing on 2469. They were the only folks who have signed up. Thank you very much. And we still have open before us then, colleagues, House Bills 2542 and 2629 for public hearing, possible work session. Okay, let's see. And I have Jody, you signed up to testify on 2629. And we had your testimony previously on 2629 on the 9th. Okay, please come in and just go ahead and let's get that in the record, Jody, and we'll get it all at one time here.
Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon, and I just wanted to provide information to you about which states have decoupled and which states have stayed connected to the federal estate tax.
Regarding 2629?
Yes.
Good. Thank you very much. Any other testimony on 2629? Any other testimony on 2542, the tax reconnect?
Chairman Butler, I just wanted to alert you that I did give you in your packet just your descriptions again of House Bill 2542. So in case you do want to discuss this with other people, it goes through and gives you one-page summary. I added the ones basically on the health savings accounts, and there was another error further back on one of the revenue impacts, so I corrected that. So there just were a few minor changes, but I just wanted to give that to you again just so everyone has that copy.
Yes, sir. That's right.
And I didn't make any changes or anything to the estimates that we were just going through, but I just want to make sure everybody's clear, because I'm not sure if the last time we had this discussion on House Bill 2542, if everyone was clear. But basically, right now with the sales tax issue, you know, the amendments that you have before you, the dash one and the dash two, do not add back the sales taxes. So basically what you're doing is you're going to be allowing a deduction then at the federal level for sales taxes in lieu of income taxes, but you won't be adding it back for Oregon purposes. So that's why it's been a loss here of $569,000 and $0305 for this 04 fiscal year. or 04 tax year, and then a loss of $607,000 in the following year. And again, this is just for 2 years, and that's just because that's all the sales tax provisions were allowed for in American Jobs Creation Act 2004. But basically, if you want any changes to that being current law, then we need additional amendments for this bill. But basically, with your dash one, your dash two, again, you basically have all those. The only difference between the dash one and the dash two were the dash one being it reestablishes the Oregon's automatic connection to federal definitions of taxable income. And so basically for the year of January, 2005, right now, between January 1st, 2005 and the end of December 31st, 2005, you would be connected with all the federal law changes with the dash one amendment. So that's the clear distinction versus your dash two amendment, which then brought in certain provisions, which, brought in the different definitions that are relating to taxable income, as well as adding amortization to the list of automatic connections, as well as the federal military compensation benefits is in the dash two. So that's the distinction between your dash one, your dash two. Both of them have the issue of the dividends and allowing that 85% dividend deduction for that temporary 1 year period, connecting with federal law, and then in the future also connecting with federal law in terms of having no dividends deduction for foreign-controlled corporations, those dividends from foreign-controlled corporations, as well as we talked about, all the REITs and any of the other dividends that are received that are not allowed a deduction at the federal level will not be allowed a deduction here in Oregon. So those are the major components of the dash one and the dash two. Any other questions?
Okay, questions of Elizabeth? And let's see, even though we do not have a public hearing still open on the 26-29, Representatives Volquist and Riley have some of the original information now from Legislative Council or Legislative Revenue Office relative to the federal death tax rates. And I just encourage you to be prepared to come back and report to us and get back with the office on the schedule as quickly as you can after you've had an opportunity to meet under the 48-hour rule. If you would please, Representatives. Thank you for your continued work in that regard.
Mr. Chair, could I clarify that you are in open public hearing for 2542 and 2629?
I still am right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's wholesome to know, isn't it? Okay. I guess I can talk on it then. Mm-hmm. Would you tell me which ones I've got to close when I get ready to close to? Okay, so if you good representatives will continue to do that then. Other comments or questions of staff, I encourage you, as I will be doing, to meet with staff independently to make sure that we understand the effects of each of the amendments as it relates to the public testimony that's been offered today. With that, colleagues, we are going to then close the public hearings on House Bills 2542 and 2629. And that's House Revenue for today. Thank you very much.